that's why I hate when people kind of get in comments and they're hating and like, well, yeah, easy for you to say or what. It's like, there's literally a level of business that anyone could do.
I know kids in like Bangalore that are doing like 80 grand a month from an old IBM ThinkPad, right? So like, I'm just positive that this is all possible.
Welcome to Money Talks.
Thank you.
Today I'm with James Camp. You're the master of buying and selling businesses and creating content around it. I came across your content basically on Twitter, I think. And I love people who do like actionable content.
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of people that just talk a lot about passive income and whatever. And I think when I saw yours, I was like, this is refreshing because you were literally like, I will buy this particular blog. And the numbers weren't. Like, I think a lot of times when you hear people talk, even if they are really successful, it's like kind of out of touch for the average person.
Sure.
Your stuff was very like, I could see how it connects with a lot of people. And, you know, you're like, yeah, I can buy this blog that makes $862 a month and I can double it doing this exact thing. And then I can sell it for this number, which is not $100 million, but it's something that could change a life. And like that I thought was really cool. And so I'm curious, like, I've seen some of your content where you're like, kind of explain to people, like, unless you're really rich and, you know, buying stocks and doing the saving thing is not going to make you rich. And I really agree with that. And I've said that a lot on the podcast and stuff. Like, I just think that, you know, it's a hot take because most people are like, oh, you got to save and invest in safe things. And I think the less money you have, the less safe you got to be because you got to like take shots at becoming rich.
100%.
Was that kind of your inspiration for getting into this whole buying business?
Well, thing? I mean, so it's funny because I definitely came across most of this by accident. I was just like an internet kid. I was like a blogger and I was like 15 and I was a pretty big affiliate marketer, like doing a big publisher. And I had bought something called uploadforever.com, which had been like a file hosting website, which like we're the same age, like dates us like, this is like way before like Spotify and stuff. Like if you wanted to listen to music, there was like Napster and LimeWire and like all these, if you wanted to download a movie, you'd go to like a file hosting site. Anyway. And I bought this old file hosting site and sort of revamped it and then put an ad network on top of it. So you had to basically click ads or like fill out affiliate offers to be able to download the content. So if someone shared with you a link, say you wanted to watch a movie, you have to like input your email into like a free iPhone offer and then you'd be able to download the movie. So that was like my first time buying something. We ended up selling that business like pretty quickly for what felt like an obscene amount of money to me at the time. In retrospect, it was not. I then spent the next 6-7 years being a derelict club promoter, chugging whiskey on a banquette for a living. And so when I sort of like got back, when I was over that and blew all the money I made there, I thought, well, what have I done in the past that really worked? Anyway, so I leaned into that. And so I think I was very lucky to have some mentors in my life that taught me a lot about like M&A and sort of how to structure transactions and how to do value add stuff. And realized that was like very applicable to these lower market, like micro businesses essentially as well. You know, you didn't have to be a big private equity shop to do it.
Yeah. So just to backtrack. So a lot of, obviously the sort of the general consensus, people talk about entrepreneurs, it's like start a business. Like that's what you hear. People want to start businesses. You need an idea. You need something that's going to change the world. You need a, you know, the hot thing, an app or a brand or like what made you lean into like, even on your first one way back, why you went and bought a business. Where did you kind of come up with that?
Well, I'll tell you. So the first one was purely by chance. All the later ones were because I have like tried 1,000 startups. Like I cannot tell you how many, I mean, I'm the king of like B output. I will just continuously put out B level stuff and I'm not afraid to. But the overwhelming majority of it all has failed astronomically. And there's like a million statistics. I'll butcher all of them, but it's like 90% of startups fail in the first 12 months, whatever, right? Like the ones that have survived that, you know, this like Lindy effect, like what has already existed will continue to exist. Like it became pretty clear to me that the most difficulty with a startup is like finding product market fit and is like getting traction and momentum. And to go back to some of that like woo-woo stuff that like, you know, the science side of this is that like, you know, the laws are like an object in motion will stay in motion. And the woo-woo side of it is that like, once you have momentum sort of in business, it's a million times easier to keep that going and to grow it than it is to start from zero. So it just became super clear to me that like, I kept failing at starting things from zero all the time. And that like the successes came from either buying something or partnering into things, buying into things that had already had traction. And that was sort of the impetus of looking at businesses in that regard.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I never even thought of it my whole life of like, oh, you could just buy a business. Like, I don't know why. It's just not, it was always like, you got to start something in that sort of that general thing that you hear. But now I've seen great examples of it. And yeah, I think like it makes so much sense for most people too. Like you remove that risk of like, finding product market fit and actually creating something and finding customers, like, you know, like you said, it's much easier to go from even a million to 10 million or 20 than to go from zero to 100K, you know?
Astronomically. Yeah, dude. I feel like, so here's like, I think a lot of like human motivation is predicated on like dopamine hits, right? Like nothing I talk about or do is rocket science, right? Generally, we could all do it. I'm a college dropout. I went to 5 high schools. Like I'm really not like, I was not a type A structured person. But I think that in general, like if you can buy something, like most people, if I told you, you have to work for 9 months straight before you see any result from any of your efforts. Most people might say yes, but they probably wouldn't do it because the reality is that you just don't have that because we're reward driven people, right? But if I told you, you know, put it in 20 grand and buy something that already has product market fit, and the moment that you have it, you're going to start seeing revenue come into the door, you're immediately much more likely to start pushing on the levers that take time to see results because you actually are already seeing it work in front of you. You're 100% sure this can work, right? And like, that's this magical moment when, and I've started some businesses that have done okay as well, but like that magical moment, like, whoa, this works, like is like this crazy ride where you're like, oh, I'm now going to work all night on this because it can work. But until then, it is a nightmare, you know? So like having the ability to like immediately the moment, you can spend 10 grand starting something that never goes anywhere. You can spend 10 grand buying something that the day one is going to make you not a ton of money, but a little bit of money. You might be like, oh, let me keep pushing on this. And that's sort of the thesis there.
You know? Yeah. So one of the biggest misconceptions of buying a business is that you need a lot of money. Like I've seen, I saw on your TikTok, like all the haters like, well, yeah, nice to say if you're rich or whatever.
Sure.
But you can actually buy a business for $0, right?
Sure, sure. What happens is the $0 transactions are seller. I mean, there's some sort of debt structure involved in them, right? So seller financing, somebody wants out. $0 businesses are going to be businesses where you are, normally it's pretty hands-on. Someone is like running it. And so you're basically saying like, I'm going to take over your job for you, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's a part-time job, right?
So you have some leverage there because it's like that person might own a small business. They were maybe ready to retire or something.
100%.
It's not something that you can sell for, you know, they might not be able to sell it at all. So it's like,
if I said to you like, hey, if you said, hey, I have a hobby, it makes me $1,000 a month. I got to spend 2 hours a week working on it. You and I might, I mean, depending on who you are, you might say, no, I'm not interested in that. But if you're a different person, you might say, yeah, I'd love to take that over from you. And you'd say, okay, great. Like, I just don't want to run it anymore. I don't want to keep putting in the 2 hours a week every month. I'd rather get like a little bit of money up front and you to pay me out of the earnings from it. Yeah, so that's a seller finance. There's a million ways to skin the cat, candidly. And then there's some interesting debt products that exist today, but they're for bigger purchases, like more a couple hundred thousand, a few million, where there's like SBA loans that will back them so you can put down 10%. But even then, like, let's say you're buying a business, like a website, like a blog or a small DTC brand for 500 grand. Like, SBA is, you could put down 10%, so you need $50,000. Like, obviously not everyone has access to this, but most people could go and start banging on enough doors to come up with $50,000, like, and that they would raise through equity,
yep,
right? And then they might put in zero themselves. I mean, and then $50,000 from investors.
Or seller financing, right?
So or seller financing to close some of the gap of that, yeah.
Tell the seller, hey, I got the 450 of the 500 from SBA.
100%.
You know, you keep the 10%, we'll earn it off with the profits, or you lend me the 50, we'll pay that off with the profits. You know the business, you know it's profitable.
100%.
If it's not, then why are you selling it to me at this price?
100%. And that, I mean, I think that's the people, that's like a simple capital stack is what I'd call it, right? And like, I think that like a lot of my thesis in the past couple of years has been like distilling what feels, I think, to most people like esoteric, guarded, like terms and chaos from the finance world and trying to make it accessible to everyone. Because this is nothing that I talk about in that regard when we talk about flipping a business. It's just like value-added private equity, right? It's just like, how do we find a business, use leverage to buy it, make small changes that are worth much more because you use leverage to buy it and then exit it. That's all value-added PE firms on the planet do it. They just do it with like $100 or $200 million businesses instead of like $50,000 ones.
Yeah. So that was something else interesting with your content. You specifically say like there is a kind of a right size to target for like most people.
Sure.
Where if you go too big, because, you know, a lot of content is very like just generalized. And I like how you specifically said like there is a size where it's like it makes sense. You have an advantage being someone, if you have a blog that makes $1,200 a month, a PE firm is not going to bother with that, right?
Yeah.
So what's kind of the sweet spot for that? So
I'd say like the space that I normally play in is like sub $5 million. And really what we end up really dealing with is like sub 500K. And so anything in that space, sub 500K, it just really doesn't make sense for a private equity shop to sort of due diligence it and underwrite it. I mean, they might spend $500,000 on that process with attorneys and legal work. So a couple $100,000, you're going to play in a space where it's just high net worth individuals normally, and you, people that use their own money. So if you can sort of figure out how to put together simple capital stacks, like I said, with like a little bit of debt, a little bit of your own equity, a little bit of some kind of investor, you start playing in a really interesting space. The problem, the positive is the negative, which is that like there's also not enough meat on the bone for you to fully have somebody else run that for you, right? So like if something makes $1,200 a month, like the idea of like fully passive income is just not going to be a reality, right? Because at $1,200 a month, there's just not enough revenue for you to pay someone to run it for you. That's one of the reasons these also these private equity firms don't want something like that, right?
Yeah.
When it's doing $120,000 a month, or when it's doing, you know, $1.2 million a month, all of a sudden you get to be a GP, you know, general partner in a fund, and sort of just hire people to run it and not run it all yourself. So a couple $100,000, like, I'd say from zero to a couple $100,000, I normally tell people to not even start looking at stuff if they don't have $5,000. And that's just mostly because I'm like very uncomfortable, like conceptually, with the idea of people spending money and them losing their money.
Yeah.
And so like, if you don't have $5,000, like you should definitely put that into a savings account and make sure you can pay your rent. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
That's sort of my pitch on that. You know?
Yeah. I think like there's different level businesses. There's like, sure, if you literally have $0, then either like go get a job or
for sure.
Or if you really want to start a business, you got to do something that's like service based. Like,
have to be.
I taught tennis when I was like 18, 19. It's like, it's straight up like you do something and you get paid, you know, X amount of cash, and you can like do as many hours as you want, and you, sure, can make more than a job. But like, it's still like, I'm not risking money to like go, you know, make that hourly income. Totally. And then once you collect enough of that, maybe a level two business, which I would consider like maybe an agency, where it's not like a huge upfront thing.
Sure.
But you're like arbitraging, let's say, overseas talent, selling that, you know, for more, your agency, definitely, starts doing well. Then maybe an e-commerce, yeah, store would be the next level. Sure. It's kind of like different levels. And like, that's why I hate when people kind of get in comments and they're hating and like, well, yeah, easy for you to say. Or what? It's like, there's literally a level of business that anyone could do.
100%. I also think that like, I'm not so dumb as to think that like, I don't like, I know that like, I didn't grow up, you know, I grew up in New York City, right? But like, I didn't grow up obscenely wealthy. You know what I mean? I have for sure slept on an air mattress before. I have for sure had eviction notices before. Like, so I just know that like, and I know kids in like Bangalore that are doing like $80,000 a month from an old IBM ThinkPad, right? So like, I'm just positive that this is all possible.
Yeah.
And to your point, yeah, there's a, maybe not the greatest guy, but Martin Scorsese. There was a video I saw of Martin Scorsese talking, and someone had called him when he was just streaming, right? Before he had bought the drug medication company. And they said, well, what do I do with my investment? I want to invest and make so much money in the stock market. And Martin Scorsese goes, you don't have enough money to worry about. You're investing in the stock market. And the kid was like, well, how do you know? I actually have six figures. And Martin Scorsese was like, fine, how much money do you have? And the kid was like, I have $130,000. And Martin Scorsese was like, you don't have enough money to worry about investing in the stock market.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, yeah, you should be putting your money into an index fund at that rate and hoping that you match the market. And, you know, otherwise, like, you know, turning 100, I know some people who really crush it in crypto, but other than that, like, you know, turning $100,000 into $1 million is not going to happen from, you know, I tell people, if you want truly passive income, the AT&T will give you a 6% dividend yield they have for 30 years straight. You know what I mean? 6% on $100,000 is going to be $6,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you want 30%, then you probably have to start taking swings at like buying something,
yeah,
or building something or investing into your own business.
That's like, everyone has different goals. Like, some people, you know, don't have the appetite for risk. They literally, totally, just want to like make their salary, know that they can pay their bills. I respect that
immensely.
But yeah, I think the disconnect is where you have a lot of people that are like, I want to be a millionaire, multimillionaire. You're literally not getting there from just, you know.
You are so, I mean,
you got to take risks.
100%. I mean, risk and reward are just like inherently tied. They always have been.
Yeah.
And I just generally believe that, yeah, this is not for everyone, by the way. And I think that's one of the really tough things about social media, is that like, I'll make these blanket statements, and like, you have to make blanket statements,
that's what,
right?
Works.
Like,
that's,
you know,
what,
like,
works. Yeah.
And especially if you want to sort of go viral and reach a wider audience. Right.
Yeah.
And then when we take clients, when we do like buy side advisory stuff, like, or that, we've like, I do a lot of like making sure that someone's a good fit for it. Right.
Cause
it's like, I'm just worried that they're not the right fit. But I do know that owning a business is not for everyone. And it's not that like, this is not like to knock on anyone who has a normal job or like wants that. Like, I also know people that make $1 million a year in salary plus bonus, you know, like,
definitely. Yeah.
You know, like,
live a great
kudos
life
to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just sort of what you want. And I think that if you really want to be an entrepreneur and you're like, are afraid, don't know what to start, like you're feeling stuck, then entrepreneurship through acquisition, which is sort of what I preach, like can be a really beautiful path to that.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think.
I think just more people need to have the mindset of like being like that passive income thing needs to stop. Like you need to be active. Like if you want to go get, if you have a job or you, and you want to make money on the side, you can, but you just need to be active. It's not passive.
Yeah.
In fact, it's passive when you have $10 million and you put it and 100%. Now you're making $500K a year. Great. That's passive income. But like, other than that,
not at all. Yeah, dude, I get sort of, I have an advertiser for my newsletter who's like coming in their advertising, and like, I had to change, sent a lot of copy revisions back to them. Cause I was like, I won't have an ad in my newsletter that says like that passive income is, I just like refuse to do it. You know what I mean? Like I have soccer blog now that like, yes, there are moments in time where I didn't do anything to it for like 4 or 5 months and collected $1,000 check off it. Like it's just a little side hustle.
Yeah.
I would never recommend that to someone, and I would never pitch that as the dream. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. So it's a good segue with the soccer blog. Sure. I was going to ask you what some recent things that either you've bought or people in your network have bought, and just to get like kind of like some tangible examples of like what actually is it that you're buying or that they're buying, and what are the numbers?
Yeah. Okay. So recently, last year I was trying to do like a roll up. So it's called, I was like trying to buy a bunch of DTC brands. Thrasio was like a big player in the Fulfilled by Amazon space. They raised a couple billion, I think, and we're playing in that space. So I was trying to do it for Shopify brands.
Okay.
I bought a hearing aid company called Blue Angels Hearing. This was like a weird, interesting transaction. The original owner, Peter, stayed on board as CEO. He's an amazing entrepreneur, phenomenal at what he does. He kept a big chunk of equity. We grew from about 50K a month to like 250,000 a month.
Is that revenue?
Top line. And then we sold it to a small private equity shop called Open Store, which is out of Miami. It's Keith Raboy, who's one of the PayPal Mafia guys.
Yeah, I've seen Open Store.
We were their first acquisition, actually.
Oh, cool.
And that was a really cool transaction because we did it in near $1 million. We did it in less than 12 months. I also get careful telling stuff like that because like I don't want anyone to think that's the realistic scenario for their first acquisition. What I always tell people is that if you're looking at buying something and you have a small budget, that like DTC is like a nightmare. E-com is a nightmare if you're brand new to this, because like, if something makes $2,000 a month and you're in like a 20% margin, it means you're selling $10,000 of product a month at like a $50 AOV, average order value. It's $50, so you're doing 200 orders a month at a 2% conversion rate. It's 10,000 clicks a month you need to be driving. Like, you're making creative, you're worrying about customer service, you're worrying about email flows, you're worrying about paid marketing, you're worrying about sourcing. Like, that's just a lot to handle if you've picked up a very busy hobby. You know what I mean? I think there's much easier money in like buying small software businesses that like can run off like cold email outreach, like B2B, not like a $49 product, more like $199 a month, right? Where if someone sticks around for 6 months, that's, the customer's worth $1,200 to you, or content businesses, like little media plays. So I love like blogs, and then have played a bit in the theme page space. So bought a group of Instagram accounts about skateboarding, and sold those like a week later for, bought them for like $100,000, sold them for $120,000 a week later.
Well, a week later.
Yeah. That was, again, like I knew a buyer that I thought would be interested. I just took the risk on it.
You thought it was underpriced a bit.
Yeah. Flew to Montreal to go do it from LA.
That's where I'm from.
Oh, there you go. I didn't even leave the airport. I literally met, like Terminal 4 has like a Hilton. Like,
that's so funny. You don't want to see the city once you're there?
I've been to Montreal. I've had my poutine. New York, I've had my Lambrusco. So that was an interesting one. I just like try and do a case study last year, which was like a total nightmare for me, just to show that you could do this on the micro level. And I bought a blog about dog frisbees for $400 in Bitcoin from a guy in Pakistan who is like a really nice guy who actually, you know, works for me. Fahad is like the man who like, now I just
give
him a job afterwards. He's made way more money than he did selling that blog to me. We sold that blog like a year later for $1,200. I just documented every single thing we did to it.
Just to be able to create
the content. Exactly. Yeah. It's funny because I definitely got way more value out of the creation of that content than I did the $800 in like, I don't know, 2 hours a week I spent on it. It was, my friends are making fun of me because it'd be like Sunday night and they'd be like editing a blog article about like Kong toys for, you know, for dogs.
And so the one that you mentioned, the 250K, or what was it? 50K a month to 250K a month you sold. What, like, what'd you buy it for? Can you say like those numbers?
I'll give you a rough idea. So we basically did like a, it was like a weird debt structure. It was a rolling in of a private company into a private company. So we did a share swap. There was like $15,000 in cash put up front for it, and then some debt and some seller financing. Okay. We ended up not even fully acquiring the entire thing by the... Well, the holdco owned everything, but Peter, my partner, ended up still owning a pretty big piece of it by the time we sold it. And most of that cost like went towards like merger docs with like securities attorneys and like actual like real... But yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, there's a lot of guys I know that are just like crushing TikTok Shop and crushing like... Not a lot, but there's a few guys who are crushing TikTok Shop and like and dropshipping that don't worry about longevity of customers. It's just front-end profitability. All they care about is like getting profitable front-end. And they end up with these like customer lists that can be pretty valuable if you want to buy those out. And then it's like, oh, you sold 1,000 phone cases. Well, what are you doing with those 1,000 emails afterwards, right? And so we're trying to figure out other opportunities to buy some of these email lists from these distressed brands.
Interesting.
And sort of re-monetize them again, introduce products to them all over again.
How many companies do you own? Like
right currently now,
I know you sell a lot of them.
I get so it's interesting. Companies, then and this is like a mental thing for me, like where I like think about companies versus like just sites, right? Because they don't all have their own LLC,
right?
Right. Yeah. But if we like talk assets about like assets. So 1, 2, 3 now. I took a really big when we started doing buy side advisory for this, and I started my newsletter NanoFlips. I was like, that business did so well. And I was like, oh my God.
The newsletter business.
Yeah, the newsletter business. And what was really weird is that like
it's a really good newsletter.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I used to run like a DTC brand. It's a CBD and Manuka honey skincare company. That's doing like $11 million a year. And we made like so little money on it. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's just the margins were thin. It was a tough business. We were, a lot of it actually was not DTC, was in retail. Like we were the first CBD company in Ulta and stuff like that. But, and then all of a sudden I had this business that I started like as a side project that wasn't even a business. Like I just was writing about it for fun. And all of a sudden the newsletter really took off. And I was like, oh, I need to like really commit some effort and some time to this. So that's really where, that's one of the reasons we got rid of the hearing aid brand and some other stuff as well, which is like, this is the time to like lean in into this.
Focus. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So why don't we dive into,
let's all look at some sites.
Actually looking at some sites. Yeah. I actually want to follow through with this and buy a business.
Cool.
It's been something I want to do for a long time. Like my concerns were always like, every time I go look, it's like, first of all, super overwhelming.
Yeah.
Million sites, million businesses, a lot of crap, a lot of like,
tons of crap,
you know, a lot of like, what am I really buying here? Is this legit? I have no idea. So like, I'm looking forward to you kind of pointing out what's good and what's not. And then it's like, what size do you go? Like, you know, if I was thinking like I had to pay the whole thing cash, it's a lot smaller business than if I was like, oh wait, I could actually finance 80 or 90% of this. So it's like, that'll be interesting to kind of see. And then like, what types of businesses, you know?
I mean, I think one thing we'll be able to do, and one thing I feel pretty good about after like doing this with hundreds of people now, is like, there's some pretty basic frameworks you can follow that will cut out like 98% of what you're looking at, which is obscenely useful, because to your point, like it is overwhelming and 98% of what you're looking at, you don't want to buy. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what sort of fits your investment thesis? The first thing I tell people always when they're due diligencing any of these businesses, like if it looks too good to be true, it is. So if someone says like it makes $8,000 a month and they don't work on it at all, like that's just fraud. I just wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Interesting. Yeah. You know? And then it's also like, again, to your point, like how much do you want to work on it? Like, I don't want to take over a newsletter and write the newsletter. That's not the point. I want to take over an asset that makes X dollars a month that I can watch from afar, you know? Yeah. So it's like, how do you find those gems too?
Where what I tell people to do first is like, go walk the neighborhoods. If you were to buy a house, right? You wouldn't just like sight unseen, like buy a house. I did actually, I was an idiot. COVID, I sold a business. And first thing I did was wire off money to go buy a house in West Philly. Cause everyone's like, oh, you build your real estate portfolio. And I was like, excellent. I'll be buying some rentals in West Philadelphia, sight unseen. And that was like such a nightmare. My point is that you would go walk a neighborhood. You'd go like figure out what the price per square foot is in the neighborhood. Go look at some listings that sold.
Yep.
And then I don't hunt, but I make this comparison all the time. I think it's like a hunter and a blind, right? It's like you should know what you're looking for and be very comfortable taking a shot when it pops up for you.
Yeah.
But not necessarily trying to just shoot immediately.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? And so like that is, it allows you to sort of, you should be able to move quickly. I'm from New York City. The New York City real estate market, they'll tell you, bring your docs with you to look at apartments because they go so quick. Yeah. It's true. Does not mean the first apartment that you walk into, you want to rent.
Yeah.
It just means that when you're ready to rent, you should be ready to rent. A lot of this is like, I'm sure you'll resonate with this. So much of like, it sounds so cheesy, but like so much of life is just like the belief that you can do it. Like I generally believe
that. Definitely.
Like, mindset is, you ever seen that like that mid-twit like bell curve meme where it's like.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like the Jedi in the end and the idiot in the beginning are both like mindset is everything.
Yeah.
And I do kind of believe that mindset is everything.
It's definitely.
Like we can all learn all the skills. Like that's not rocket science. But so often what I try and tell people is like in their first deal, like go buy something for $5,000.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like make it work. Use your own money. Buy something for $5,000. Make it work. Just see that it's totally fucking possible.
Yeah.
And then sack up if you want. You know, you'll find out real quick whether this is for you.
I mean, I've owned a couple businesses and I actually just bought not the whole thing, but a minority piece of a retail business.
Oh, sick.
And yeah, that was cool. Like you were saying, like I overlooked the part of like, we just took over one day and immediately I'm like, oh, this did whatever dollars today. And I'm looking at, oh, okay, cool. That's this much profit. Like, and it's just so much, I've started all these things that kind of either didn't take off or like, you know, did, but like, it just took so long to like launch.
Dude, it makes
and this
such
was
a
like
difference.
Literally like agreed on something. The next day we're selling stuff. And
I mean, hypothetically,
and it does drive you. And then I'm like, oh wait, how do we double the revenue? Oh, how do we double the profit? Oh, I can just, you start thinking on these strategic things instead of like, you know, yeah, it just fuels you. It's that
cycle.
It
makes such a difference. I mean, I think one thing that when I do like consulting work, which I really don't do very often these days because I don't love client work. But when I do consulting work, what I always used to tell people is like, I'm 100% sure I can find a 1% inefficiency in any business on the planet. Any business on the planet. The question is whether it's worth you paying me to find that 1% inefficiency. Because if you make $1,000 a month, then 1% inefficiency is $10. You have to pay me less than $10 for it to be a positive for you. But, and so this happens when you have zero revenue. When you have zero revenue, it doesn't matter all the inefficiencies I can find. You're just burning money trying to make something work.
Yeah.
But if you buy something that has, or you're running a business that does $10 million in revenue, $100 million in revenue, that 1% inefficiency is really worth paying for that change. So my point is like, when you're starting from zero, you're just throwing energy at trying to get any traction. Whereas like when you buy something, whether minority or majority stake, you can very quickly be like, oh, I can make these 3% changes and that's really worth my time. That might be really worth my effort. Where it's, you don't know if it is when you're at zero. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Y Combinator, like YC.
Yep. Yeah.
So YC has this thing they call like the trough of despair, which is that like, and it's so true, dude. Like all startups, like when you start something new, and I love starting stuff from scratch too. It doesn't always work, but I love starting stuff from scratch. When you start something new, you're just excited. You just push on because it's fun and it's cool. And then you get a little traction and it's okay. And then you hit the trough of despair. You get this long-winded time in which you're trying to make product market fit work, nothing you're trying works, you're throwing spaghetti at the wall, it's not sticking, before you come out into the hockey stick curve of growth. And then most founders give up in that trough of despair.
Yeah.
They're like, they'll work for a couple months and it's fun, and then you're not making money, you're just burning money, things aren't great, and you're another 6, 12, 24 months of just trying to figure it out, and that's when people give up before they actually figure out how to do it. So there are few people on this planet who can just fight through that, more power to them. If they can find something they're passionate about, I think anyone can. But if you don't find something you're that passionate about, like changing the world, then like going 6, 12, 24 months, as someone who's done that on like $2,000 a month and raised capital, like paying myself a salary and like sleeping on an air mattress, like you got to really believe in what's got you got going on, you know? So it's easier just to sort of hop on board with something that already has come out of that trough.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool. So what site would you start with?
So there's going to be first basic stuff. There's like brokerages versus marketplaces. And the thing to remember here is that like a brokerage is going to be deals that have already sort of been vetted by someone, right? They're not going to be small though, right? They're going to be bigger. So brokerages are going to be like FE International, Quiet Light, Empire Flippers. You're going to find a better quality overall deal there because a broker has already done due diligence and decided to take on that transaction in exchange for like 10% of that purchase price, right? But if you're not there, the places I'm going to be looking are marketplaces. There's also some interesting off-market stuff that I'll talk about afterwards where I think there's like the best deals I've ever gotten are off-market deals.
Yeah, sort of like real estate.
100%, yeah. Like all my friends who work in commercial real estate are like, tell me like by the time it's on LoopNet, like we've already looked at it and decided we don't want it, you know, for sure. But anyway, so the main places are going to be Flippa.com, which has gotten way better recently. I don't want to say sound like they were bad, but there was a while where there's a bunch of not quality stuff on Flippa.
Yeah.
Flippa.com, Acquire.com, and then there's a couple of smaller ones like Motion Invest, which are all just going to be blogs. Blogs are having a weird moment in time right now because some Google updates, although we can talk about how to mitigate some of that. But so Flippa.com and Acquire.com are going to be your main places.
And Kumo is one that aggregates all of them?
Yes. So I was going to
say. I've been on
Kumo. So Kumo's good. There's a couple aggregators that will aggregate all of them for you. With that said, the big industry shift that we're seeing that makes Kumo tough and other things like Kumo is that all the best deals are now going under NDA, right? Or income verification. So, i.e., like Kumo can't just give you all the details of a listing because it's everyone hasn't signed a hasn't signed an NDA for it.
Yeah.
But Kumo would be a good example. But I actually think that even before Kumo, I would just like, in terms of someone brand new at this, I would just get comfortable, right? Like I would just be like going, we'll go to like Flippa.com. It's just like the largest marketplace on the planet.
I've definitely scrolled Flippa a good amount. I remember once, like whenever I've like looked at businesses to buy online, I'm like, I should buy something that I'm like remotely interested in.
Sure.
Like, you know, I don't want to buy a soccer blog because I'm not that interested in soccer. 100%. And I saw like a music marketing company. And I was like, that's cool. I do some music. I have a lot of friends who are artists. I have a lot of friends in LA who work in music. Sure. I'm like, I know a lot about that space, the marketing stuff too. But then I'm like looking and I'm like, this just doesn't make sense. Like they were showing like something like 50,000 profit a month or something.
Yeah.
And I looked at the site and I'm like,
no way.
I don't see. It just didn't add up to me. And it's like, then I was like frozen. Like, okay, how do we even know? Like, so, you know, so where would we start?
What I would say is that like, actually, before we even get to Flippa, I would say that you would sort of want to think about what your budget's going to be. Like the very, very simple things, the same way if you were buying a house.
Yeah.
We'd say like, okay, like there's a very, you know, and we live in LA, right? You're in Venice, I live in WeHo. Like what kind of house do you want? Like what kind of neighborhood do you want? And what's your budget like? Because otherwise you're going to be totally lost, right? So even the most basics of like, what is the pricing of what you want to buy? So do you have $5,000? If you do, it's going to totally change the market structure for you, what's there versus $5 million, right? And then the other thing I would think about is where your skill sets lie and then where your interests are. So for years, I told people to not worry about their interests. It was a different game. Because years ago with blogs, I started doing, I'm 35. I mean, I remember I found like an old blog post, an old thread I made on a forum I used to run called Black Hat World when I was like a teenager. And it was like, you guys, I sold my first website and it made $500 a month and I sold it for $5,000. And like at the time, it was such a new industry that you could, like the multiples were just 10 times a monthly net revenue for something. Now it's more like a 30 for something good. So, but you could just make a blog about anything and write really crappy content and it would rank in Google. That world has changed. And so I'd say that like, as we're moving into a world in which, especially if we're talking about blogging specifically or content sites or theme pages, I told you that my thesis is that people are motivated by dopamine. So in the same train of thought there, like, if you're going to have to run something yourself, it's small, I would have it be something you have some interest in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, I agree with that. So let's say for me, okay, I don't want to work in the business.
Okay, sure.
I don't mind working on the business. So like I buy something that's running and I go, hey, if we, you know, add this product, we're going to add 30% revenue. Like I don't mind that, but I don't want to have to like run the business. So if it's a newsletter, I don't want to be writing the newsletter.
Sure.
I would say budget, I would say, I mean, it depends so much. Cause if you told me like, hey, you could put down $1 million and you get this amazing business that makes $10 million a year. Yeah. Like, sure. So it's not, I don't know what, I don't want to like give a hard thing, but let's say I want to start with like putting in 25 to 50K.
Sure. Okay.
And then maybe I could buy something that's 500K cause I'm putting down 10% or maybe not.
Sure.
So I'd say that's kind of the range we should try and do.
Okay. So what I'll tell you is, okay. So if we're in the, so let's say it's 25 to 50K. I'll go with you here because I think you're not the average Joe. But I will say that if you had a $25,000 budget, I wouldn't look at levering up on normally 450 grand in debt for the average person. I would just be like, probably not for your first swing at it to take at it, right?
Yeah.
You're not the average Joe. So we'll follow along with that. But
I think the pricing, so I think it's important to say because like it has to be somewhat, again, with the dopamine thing and like like keeping that cycle. It's like if I buy something that makes like, you know, $100 a month, I'm not going to be that motivated. To
100%.
Not that they say that no one would, but like for me, I need something that, oh, like this is like, I'm putting something, you know, that I, and I'm buying something that feels like, oh, this is worth my time. And this is worth like my energy towards it.
100%.
So that's what I think in that
range. That's you. Yeah, that makes total sense. So that's why I think you might be slightly different than the average person. Right. And so let's say you wanted to buy something for a couple hundred grand. Flippa might be the place to do it. I would say that if we're looking at seller financing, it's going to be hard to seller finance. The most seller financing you're going to find is off-market deals. So someone that doesn't know that they want to sell their business, you get a knock on your door. It's like, hey, man, do you want to sell your business? And they're like, well, yeah, I guess. Like, it would actually be great to not have to do this all the time. But so you have to find like a sweet spot. So what you're saying is totally possible, but we have to figure out where there's enough margin to hire someone else to run it so that you're not, so you don't have to run it.
Yeah.
I would say, like, I would ignore this button right here that says Shopify right off the bat, you know, just because it's just going to be, there's a lot of OpEx that goes into running a direct-to-consumer brand.
Like,
you know?
Physical goods.
Like, the physical goods, yes, but even specifically, like, let's say you're running any sort of e-commerce brand that sells products, right? Like, there's a lot more opportunity, but it's very hands-on. Like, do they have the right abandoned cart flows? Do they have the right, you know, like, there's all these different email flows. There's all these different paid ads you're running, like, different creative. Like, are you running SEO on it? So I like to think if you want to have the most hands-off businesses, it's going to be you either sell a singular product or you're selling eyeballs, right? So it's going to be content, media-based. So that might be, like, a blog or a newsletter. Luckily, I think at the size you're talking about, you could have a newsletter that you don't have to write, you know? Or I would say like a micro SaaS, right? Something that probably B2B, again, where it's like, you know, the average customer value is over $1,000. So it, all of a sudden you can pay someone to be doing, to pull a lead list using something like hunter.io or LinkedIn Sales Navigator and like basically an overseas SDR, like, you know, or BDR, like sales development rep or business development rep that's just going out and emailing brands and offering them, you know,
yeah,
a deal on it. So,
I like the SaaS idea.
Okay.
Could that be like a Google, what's it called? The Google add-on. I'm blanking on the...
Oh, just a Google Ads, you mean? Oh,
no, like no, a Chrome, like a Chrome extension. Chrome.
Sure, it could be. So, so SaaS narrows this down. So what I'll tell you is that the number one space...
So I like that. And I was going to say the other thing that I think is really interesting, sure, is a newsletter that complements, let's say, this podcast, right? Because, sure, I'm already in the media game.
Yeah.
I want this podcast to blow up more. Like maybe I buy a newsletter in the business sector that, sure, I can now like link in Money Talks. I know that's actually how My First Million blew up and, sure, started. Like they had, you know, I think Sean started My First Million before.
Yeah.
And then brought in Sam, who owned The Hustle,
yeah,
2 million readers or whatever, plugged it there.
Sure.
First episode ever with the two of them, 60,000 downloads. So that's not a bad play. I buy a profitable newsletter.
Yeah.
And then I plug Money Talks. And
so
then, you know.
Yeah. So there's two places I would say we start looking then. So for software, the sweet spots are going to be either Microns or acquire.com. And then Deuce, which is an interesting name, but that's the newsletter marketplace. Oh, yeah.
I'm on there too.
And so I think that there's a massive opportunity for bolt-on businesses or roll-ins, right?
Yeah, I sort of think of it as like, how can you build your flywheel and how can you, like, whether that's knowledge, like, you know, if you're the most knowledgeable person about table tennis in California, then yeah, buy a table tennis blog. Yeah. You know, like, it just like can only help grow it. And if you have, like, I have a podcast that I want to promote via a newsletter that can help that. So I think that is an interesting way to look at it.
There was a keyword research tool that was doing like a couple thousand bucks a year in revenue, pretty small, on Flippa. I just know that my audience, I have 80,000 followers on Twitter, 30,000 on TikTok, I have a 20,000 person email list where I talk about how to do online marketing. A lot of it is keyword research based. For me, I look at that business that was originally still for like 6,800. And now I think it's for stuff of 4,800 because it does like $1,500 a year in revenue. It's tiny. Was be like, hey, listen to the seller. Hey, listen, I'll give you $2,000 up front. You can keep 20% of the business and I'll pay you the other $2,000, you know, within 6 months. But here's the magic. I have a massive audience and I can make this tool all of a sudden do $10,000 a month, right?
Yeah.
And so like, that's the same mindset as you're, yep, having about this, right? It's like, I don't want to go
one
build.
One plus one equals three.
Like, I don't want to go build a keyword research tool from scratch, right? But like, would I take one? I promote Ahrefs, which is the one I use all the time. I don't get paid to promote it. I just talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, let's say it's $50 a month. Could I go get 20 people into it? Yeah, for sure. You know, could I get 50 people into it? I think quite likely, you know?
So what does Ahrefs do? What are these?
So Ahrefs is basically, it's an SEO tool mostly. It'll tell you like, if you want to, like what exists in Google for a competition, right? So let's say I wanted to rank for Money Talks, right? It might be almost impossible to rank for that term Money Talks in Google because of the competition. But it would allow me to go look and see like, what are the keywords that I do think I might be able to rank for?
Okay.
And what would be required to rank for them in Google?
Okay.
And so that's a very specific tool that works for me. But I do think that everyone in their lives, like what you and I have very clear value add things, right? Very clear things that we can buy that are additions to our businesses currently.
Yeah.
But I do think that everyone can find something that is like, they have a point of leverage. And I think that there's most people are like, what? No way. But like, I bought a soccer blog. I don't know much about soccer. Probably not the best acquisition for me. I did it because I think that American soccer is a nascent industry that's going to blow up. I mean, when Messi signed to Miami, it was like a huge deal.
Yeah.
We have the World Cup coming here. Like, I'm just making a bet on all ships rising in high tide. But if you're a soccer fanatic, right, like, you just automatically have an edge. You know,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
that's kind of what I was saying. Your point of leverage doesn't have to be money or another business. It can just be knowledge and interest, you know.
100%. So when yeah. I think about making this, and we do this with clients and sort of what we're doing now, which is like, so what's your budget look like? You know what I mean? Like, what's your time frame look like? You know, like, yeah. What, like, how much time do you have? Because we talked about in the beginning, like, passive income is, I don't want to call it a farce, but I'm a little dubious of passive income at lower budgets, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, do you have a couple hours a week, or are you full-time ready to rock and roll? You know, like, are you ready to add 40 hours a week?
Yeah.
Probably not. You clearly don't want to, right? You clearly don't have the time to. But some people are like, oh, I can commit 20 hours a week to something, right? Yeah. And so you have to either have time or money. And this is sort of the really, and I can teach people how to close valuation gaps. I can talk about financing. I can talk about how to structure seller financing. I can tell you lenders who are likely to give you money in this space. For software, I can point you towards lenders that basically do invoice factoring and will lend you to buy software. But you either have to have time or money. Those are one of the two things you have to have. So for you, you have money, you have skill sets, you have some time. Obviously, you don't want to commit a massive amount of time to it. I think that for you, we've now narrowed it down to, okay, maybe a newsletter that becomes an add-on for Money Talks, right? That makes enough money today that you can justify paying somebody else to write it.
Yeah, or acquire something with, like, the writer with it or something.
100%.
Maybe it's someone else owns it and they have the writers that don't necessarily want to leave.
100%.
That would be ideal for me, where it's like, you know.
Very possible. And the other thing is I'm really, like, on the verge about how I feel about AI, but I will say that today, AI and newsletters and a good, like, someone that's good overseas is, like, pretty nutty, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And depends, obviously, what you're writing about. Like, for me with NanoFlips, like, I have to write those. And I can't wait for the day that AI can write those for me.
Yeah,
it's like,
it's coming.
You know, it's coming for sure. But in the meantime, a lot of newsletters are really, like, aggregation driven. You're talking about Sean Puri, right? Like, Sean has his 5 Tweet Tuesday or whatever, right? Like, it's just 5 tweets that he thinks are interesting, right?
Great email.
Yeah, great email. And even if you don't have, even if there's not a writer that's there for it now, I'm 100% sure we could find someone for, like, $300 a month to write 5 Tweet Tuesday for you. Very easily.
True.
And they could expand on it by taking those tweets and plugging them into ChatGPT and having a little written thing. As well.
So the asset that with a newsletter is the emails.
And you're selling eyeballs there. And with the real magic with newsletters, you might be able to say, most newsletters are selling sponsorship. So they get paid on, like, RPM, like revenue per milli, or which is, like, revenue per 1,000, I guess, in Latin. Or CPO, cost per open. But the real value is if you can start making your own products to sell on the back end, right? Like, and whether it be consulting work or whether that be, you know, information products like courses or communities, et cetera, et cetera. The Hustle's back end was, the Hustle made a lot of money selling ad slots. They also made a lot of money off their community, right? Which is a paid community to be inside the Hustle and the Facebook group. Anyway, so you create your criteria. What's your budget? What are you vaguely interested in or have a point of leverage in? And then what is your, do you have time or money? That sort of goes into it.
Yeah.
Most people, I'm going to tell them to stay away from physical goods, e-commerce. That's just most
It's harder.
It's super
it's hard. It's harder, it's for sure.
You know, like, and kudos to those who can do it. I've done it. I know lots of people that can. Much, you know, smarter people than I have had harder times. I'm just saying, for your first run at it, like, if you've never logged into anything in the world, you know.
I had that realization when I was, like, 15. I was, like, selling sneakers on eBay.
Sure.
And, like, I remember just being like, damn. And, like, obviously at the time, like, I wasn't thinking, like, oh, I need to, like, hire someone to, I don't know, shipping department. I was just like, I'd sell something, I'd go to the post office, ship it, I'd come back, and I'm like, damn, like, all that to ship out something. If I do 10 packages, I got to go to the post office 10 times. It sucks. And then discovered more internet stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is.
And you can find a 3PL, but then 3PL is going to eat in your margins most of the time, all that stuff. I actually had
a 3PL once that was really good for my cookie company. And it was, like, it was really great to work with them. They got lower shipping rates than I paid.
Because they got wholesale basically shipping rates.
And they did everything. And I was like, this is amazing.
Well, if you can find, I mean, with e-commerce, that's one of the main things. I think that there's, like, you know that saying, like, you don't get if you don't ask?
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, people all the time will, like, look at a business. One of the best ways I've seen to increase margins is, like, literally asking, right? So it's like calling a supplier and being like, I'm going to go to a different supplier. Can you give me a better rate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, or going to a 3PL and being like, hey, I'm paying X for, because to your point, some of those 3PLs are literally just basically getting wholesale shipping costs. Like, Amazon does not pay to ship the same cost that you and I pay to ship. You know, when you send, you know, 18 million packages an hour, You know, they give you a deal on on shipping. But so tell most people to take from that. So you set your criteria, and you know, we have these lists of marketplaces and brokers. Certain ones are going to go to certain places. For you, we'd look at like Acquire or Deuce for sure. So like there's like discords for newsletters right now, right? For newsletter operators. They have like 500 newsletter operators on them, right?
Really?
And so they're not all thinking about selling their newsletter right now, but I can promise you there's a bunch of them that have been like, man, like this is a grind. I'm like not super pumped about writing this newsletter.
Right, you know?
But you might be able to go to them and be like, oh, this is within my niche. Like reach out to them and be like, hey, you're making no money off your newsletter now. What if I give you $5,000 for it today? You keep running it for the next 6 months. You can keep a little equity in it. You get to keep the $5,000. Now all of a sudden they're getting paid to run it. And it's all of a sudden pushing money talks.
Interesting.
So, newsletter due diligence is going to be a little bit different than other business due diligence.
Okay.
But so with like a newsletter, like one of the first things that people don't do that I would just do, and this is like the most simple level of due diligence ever. And I think about this with all businesses, like KISS, like keep it simple, stupid, is like, I would just like ask someone to send me, like to send one out on my behalf. And so like, if you're telling me, like people say, how do I know a newsletter is real? Well, first of all, all these things today, whether it's ConvertKit or Aweber or Beehive, or, you know, you can get added into like access where you're not an admin, right? Where you're not an editor, where you can't change things for it, right? So if you have a website, you want to be added into analytics immediately. You want to be added into Google Search Console immediately. And that doesn't mean that you can
change.
Before you buy it.
Yeah.
For sure. If something sells on Stripe, add me into your Stripe account. You know, like for sure, I want to see those transactions.
You want to see.
To see for sure that what you're claiming is actually real.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, some of the larger transactions that I go through, like it's not just Stripe. Like I want to see reconcile books that Stripe is hitting that bank account, right? Like not just that, like, because the homie could just be going into Stripe and buying 10 things a day for a month, and all of a sudden you'd be like, whoa, this thing really makes money.
You want to see like bank statements.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm always worried about, right? It's like, you could fake so many things, you know, especially in the newsletter, social media world, like everything's fake these
100%.
Days. 100%. Like, I literally don't know what's real anymore.
So that's why with newsletters, one of the first things I would do is I would say like, let's pretend I'm an advertiser, right? I want to see how efficacious this really is.
Yeah.
Right? So like you say you have 20,000 subscribers. Excellent. First of all, add me into ConvertKit or Beehive, whatever it is.
Mm.
Don't give me an editor access so I can change things or steal your list, but just give me access to the back end. I want to like be able to look and see that these are real.
Yeah.
That you actually sent these emails.
Let's see this one right here. 51,000
subs for 40K.
Yeah, this for 40K. Is that a good price?
Yeah. I would say that starts to be where you want to start asking yourself, and I just know from running ads for a long enough time, like what would it cost to replace these subs?
Yeah.
Right. And $1 a sub is pretty good. You know what I mean? Like you're probably going to spend more than $1 a sub acquiring subscribers.
Okay.
And what's nice is that not only are you paying $1 a subscriber here in this one, but they're probably indoctrinated. So they've probably gotten tons of emails. There's much more value. Same thing with social, as we all know. Like if you've seen me 100 times, there's much more value in you seeing me than if the first time you see me, right? So even if I could go acquire subs for $1 each, 50,000 of them, they would have only never gotten an email from me yet, right?
Yeah.
I'd much rather get 50,000 subscribers that have gotten 30 emails from me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because now they trust me. They understand them. Yeah, they're warm.
What's a good rate per subscriber?
At the time, I mean, there's like a lot of these are old adages that aren't really always true, but like a good newsletter can pull $1 a month, you know, like
$1 per subscriber.
$1 per subscriber per month. I can pull way more depending on what you're selling, right? Yeah. But like you should be able to pull $1 per subscriber per month out of a newsletter.
And let's say I wanted to promote the podcast, I don't have to give up the ad revenue, right? I could have advertisers and then just like do a little article about the podcast, or maybe one 100% empty slot, throw it in, or so you can double dip a little bit.
So I would ask wherever this is, let's assume it's on ConvertKit, which is what my newsletter is on. I would go and I'd be asking to get added into ConvertKit to confirm some of the data that they're claiming. Right? Like bare minimum. Okay. They said they have 51,000 subscribers. I want to go and see in the total subscribers that the total subscriber count is there.
Right.
Right. I want to go into some of the sends, the broadcasts, that's what we call them in ConvertKit. That'd be different than anything else. And I want to see, like, are there a bunch of them? Is it just one? Like how many times you can see my sends go back 2 years in here. Right.
And that makes it legit.
And that makes it feel legit.
What the
right?
open like, rates
are. Are the open rates consistent, right? I'm 57% open rate. That's good, but it's not impossible. 90% is going to be bullshit. There's no way 90% of it's going to be open rate, right? What I'll tell you for this newsletter one is here, open rate 19%, that's low. That is very low. But like, okay, this 51,000 subs, if you're getting a 50% open or a 40% open, or even 30, which is where I'd expect it more, for 40 grand starts to be a steal. I would start saying to this person that has not sold this newsletter yet, Marketing Moves, still has zero offers, I'd say, okay, you're getting a 20% open. If I went into ConvertKit or Beehive or whatever their ESP, their emailing platform was, and I saw consistently they were emailing it all the time, only getting a 20% open, I would say, when was the last time you cleaned your list? Because a lot of the subscribers are totally worthless, right?
Right.
So I'm only willing to pay you for, maybe you can negotiate down to half, right? Like, you know, they've got no offers. What I'll tell you right now is that everyone is really cocky about what their business is worth until they have no offers for it, you know?
Yeah. So you'd come in, maybe offer 10,000.
Yeah. This is a great example where I might come in and be like, hey, I'm going to give you 10 grand up front. From the list size, 20% opens. That means that 10,000 people are opening it each time, right? 10,000 people opening each time. If you are getting like a $20 CPM, which would seem reasonable for this niche, right? So, and I just happen to know these different numbers, but this is why you start doing research into figuring out like what it's worth. That means you're getting paid $20 for every 1,000 people on the list or 1,000 opens on CPOs. So 20% open would be 10,000 opens. That would mean that you should probably get $200 per send from this, and they're making $400 a month. That seems low to me.
And you could send something twice a day if you want.
I would say for something that someone's used to getting weekly, I would say you probably max out at like a once a day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Depends on the niche. I had a financial newsletter, and for that we're doing every day. In fact, sometimes we're doing twice a day because if you're following stocks, if you're following like I can write before the market opens and give you relevant news, and I can write at the market close and give you relevant news on stocks. But if it's marketing news, maybe not.
How do we figure out like the actual workings of the business? Because like, let's say they're like, yeah, you take this over and you got to write it, then I'm no longer interested.
Sure.
So how do we like figure out like, well, I guess it gives like some strengths and weaknesses, but like, you know, who's writing it? So we would go literally on this site and we could ask them straight up, like respond to
it. I would go through Deuce and I'd start asking them the questions. I'd start asking them what's the day-to-day like to run this business?
Yeah.
Who writes the newsletter? Do you have an SOP for running a newsletter? Right? Because if there is like a standard operating procedure, if there is like a template, like then maybe you don't have to write it. Even if they're writing it now, when you buy it, maybe it's very easy to hand this off to someone. Again, if it's like Sean's 5-Tweet Tuesday, it's just an aggregation of news.
Yeah.
Like we could go find someone for $300 a month to write this. Super easy, mm-hmm. right? But from due diligence standpoint, I would want to get into ConvertKit or Beehive is their scenario. I just don't have a Beehive newsletter I can go through. I want to confirm that these subscribers were real. I'd want them to send one for me. I'd be like, hey, can you send, I'll pay you.
Yeah. They would do it. Like, let's say, have you seen people, like if I was like, yeah, I want to test this out, you're going to link our newest Money Talks episode.
Sure.
Let me see how many plays
it gets. That's exactly what I would ask them to do.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I would ask them to do. And then it's very easy for you to decide, like, does this make sense for me adding to my business?
Yeah, if it adds zero plays, it's like, doesn't even work.
It's not worth it at all, right? But I think that's exactly the way I would run it with them. And by the way, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, oh, you're normally charging $100 a send. I'll pay you $100. Like, I'll pay you $100 to be the advertiser, to have Money Talks be the advertiser inside of it for this 1 cent.
Yeah.
It's worth, what I think is important is, like, when I told you, I remember for recording, I'm sure, where I bought all these Instagram pages for $100,000. Like, I flew to Montreal, right? People are like, you flew to Montreal? Like, yeah, I spent, like, $1,600 on flights and a hotel room for a night to make sure that $100,000 didn't disappear.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, if you're willing to spend 10 grand on this newsletter or 15, whatever it is. Yeah,
what's $100?
What's $100? You know what I mean? Like, you should be willing to... And by the way, for some people, they're not going to be you. They're going to be much more in this size, the $1,900 space. And so spending $100 might not work for them.
Yeah.
But for you, if you're running a 10K check, right, $100 could be really worth it. But the very low level of it is, if it seems too good to be true, it is. And the best way... In the same way, if you wanted to go buy a sneaker company, I would tell you, you should go try their sneakers on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, straight up. If you wanted to go, you're going to buy an ice cream, you're going to buy a cookie company, I would tell you, have you had the cookie? You know what I mean? Like, you should probably just try that cookie. That. You know, like, at the first entry level into this. And so, like, if you're going to go buy a company that sells ad space, buy an ad slot from them. See how that actually works. And then go inside. If you're going to buy a cookie company, I want to walk into the kitchen. I want to see how the commercial kitchen works. I want to make sure that there's, like, everything's up to the standards. I want to make sure that, I want to know what the cost of you, what the cost of your flour are, you know, like any of these things in this example. For here, I'd say like your ESP, your ConvertKit, your Beehive, that's the commercial, that's your kitchen, right? Like, I want to see the ingredients are there.
Yeah.
I want to see they actually make sense.
And you got to have the knowledge like you've just given us.
Totally.
Of like, here's all the things to look for. Here's a good number. Here's
and that's why, number. That's why I say like 90% of my job with what we do with NanoFlips is like, I'm bringing you everyone into this world that this is possible. The next thing we want to do is like make it so you don't buy a piece of crap, right? Because there's so much crap out there. Yeah. And so most of that can be mitigated with just some basic checklists and some basic knowledge. The growing of it can be complex, but the like buying something that is not, because if you buy something good and you're not good at running it, someone else will buy it from you, right? It's not like a total loss.
It's an asset.
It's an asset, right? And so that's, so we had, I told you I bought some
stuff. Buy a building and don't rent it, like
someone else will buy that building. It's just about buying a decent building. So then if we're looking at the newsletters, for example, like even right off the bat, like I just know that I don't want to like drastically overpay for something. Like here are interesting things. And we talk about bolt-on businesses.
Yeah.
I don't use Azure. Right? Like, I don't
know what that is.
Exactly. But it's a newsletter focused specifically on Azure technology and information. If you owned like an Azure consulting business, right? Super niche.
Right.
But like, hell yeah, you would pay $4,000 for 1,200 subscribers in this space. Because even though 1,200 subscribers seems really low, if you charge like, remember we talked about like the first way to make money is like this level one business, like selling your time.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you're charging $300,000-$500,000 an hour for your Azure consulting, like, maybe this is very
1,200 leads, you
know? And 1,200 leads straight up. And I think for the agency world, which is really where a lot of people start in, and obviously very sophisticated operators too. But for the agency world, like I know people that have 1,200 followers on Twitter that are doing $500,000 a year because their followers are very specific about what their agency service offers.
Yeah.
Right. So if you do email marketing for CBD brands, right, and you got 1,200 followers that are all CBD brands, you're off to the races. You run a $1 million agency from those 1,200 followers. Because if you charge $5,000 a month to them, you only need 20 of those people to become customers of yours to be doing $1.2 million a year.
Yeah.
Right? And so,
that's a great point.
You know, it's really interesting to think about that. The only time for you and I, when we talk about media companies, we're selling eyeballs, right? We need tons of them, right? Because eyeballs are worth so much less than sort of the back end.
Yeah.
But so I think that's important to remember is like, I don't think that you should look at this and say, oh, this is crap. There's only 1,200 subs. It only makes $190 a month. Yeah, if you were buying this just on like, I like writing about Azure and I want to, you know, I'll spend $4,000 for it, that might be a nice little side hustle. But if you had a consultancy, I don't know enough about Azure to really speak about it. But you get my point, right? Like, yeah. Like it might be super valuable to you.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
So anyway, even if we go, I mean,
I love niche things. If I don't know the niche, I really appreciate like, oh, what?
How do you end up doing that? Stuff too.
Yeah. Just like super, you know, a caviar store that imports caviar from this part of Russia, and so it's like, what? Like,
yeah,
how did someone end up doing that? But like,
yeah, you know, dude. No, and I think that's. There's riches in the niches, right? As people say, right? And it's definitely true, right? Like caviar is so niche, right? But like if you are, I don't know, if you have like a sturgeon farm, you're probably printing money selling, you know, freshwater sturgeon caviar. What I can tell you right now, we'll look at a couple like things that aren't newsletters really quickly. Yeah. Like
this is what
site? Motioninvest.com. So all they sell are blogs.
Yeah, I haven't heard of this one. Okay, yeah, blog is cool.
Yeah, and so blogs are going through a weird moment in time because most of the blogs get their traffic from Google.
Also, the AI stuff is really changing that. Yeah.
And so for me, one of the bets we're trying to make is that how do we create, normally people create content for blogs. They hope to get their traffic from Google, but you can also get it from social, right? And so what's interesting is like we're running ads to a soccer Facebook page to try and build up likes on a soccer Facebook page and then be sending and then creating AI content that we think is going to be super interesting to those likes. I don't really care about long tail keywords. I don't care about how it ranks in Google.
Yeah.
But if you like soccer, I think everyone knows who Lionel Messi is, right? Like it's not so crazy to think about, I'm not going to rank in Google for Lionel Messi's top goals. I'm just not going to.
Yeah.
ESPN is or soccer.com or goal.com, right? But can I, if I build up a large fan page about soccer, can I, or a newsletter about soccer, can I feed them our article about Messi's top goals and then click through it? 100%.
That makes sense.
So
let's say for me, if I'm like, okay, would I start with what I'm interested in or what I know at all? Because it's...
Yeah, I would say to be open to you being vague, right? What I mean by that is like, it's not going to have to be like your exact super thing that you know, right?
Soccer is like, oh, I like other sports and yes, I know a little bit about soccer.
I can make that happen. I'm watching soccer, sure. Right? Like,
yeah.
So like broad will work in that regard. So what I'll say about content sites for sale is that what I always tell people, I have bought distressed properties before because I've been doing this for 20 years. And when I say distressed, I mean things that are falling apart. I would recommend if this is your first purchase, we want to buy good things. I'd rather you slightly pay a higher multiple for something that is a beautiful house that needs a new fresh coat of paint and maybe some new appliances.
I have the same approach with like houses. Like, yeah. You know what? That's like this common thing that everyone's like, oh yeah, buy a fixer upper. And I'm always like, why would I buy a fixer upper? I'm not in the construction business.
Totally.
I don't know anything. I don't want to be in that business. Why would I spend my time and energy buying a fixer upper to fix it up when I could just buy a house I like and then use my time on my own business?
Dude, that 100%.
Like, people don't get that concept often. It's funny. It's the same for this. You're
the
like,
exact same.
Buy something good.
I'll tell you for myself with the houses, what I had happen, which is really interesting. I sold a portfolio of financial news sites and newsletters in 2020. And I think I mentioned this earlier. That transaction closed July 2nd, 2020. I know because it's the biggest deal in my life. And I bought a house in West Philly.
The Keith Raboy, the same one?
That, no. Oh, this is different. Yeah.
Okay.
That was how we sort of funded that deal.
Okay.
This was something different. But I took that money and the first thing I did was buy a house. I thought, this is what people do. I want to build my rental portfolio, right? And I did not buy a decent house. I bought a total, like, dilapidated piece of garbage from someone who had not been in the house in 4 months. I wired off, I think, like $90,000 sight unseen because some wholesaler kid was like, yeah, dude, this is the house to buy. Trust me. You know, this. Anyway, I go to the house. I can't build IKEA furniture. You know yeah, what I mean? And like, I'm learning what like Bilco doors are and all these different things, you know? And the lesson I learned in that, I did a full gut reno, added a floor, added a deck, added a bedroom, a bathroom, redid full gut reno. And I had budgeted, I think, like $80,000 or $90,000 in reno for the house. I think I had spent like 200, you know, like I went way over budget, went like 9 months over time and budget, everything.
Yeah.
And the lesson I learned about that was the same thing about these websites, right? Is that if you don't know what you're doing, if you aren't core or new to this, you're way better off buying a great house, right? Again, that maybe needs some paint, that maybe needs like some new appliances, but the worst comes to worst, there's a new buyer for it immediately if you want out.
Yeah.
Versus like trying to catch a falling knife, like buying something that has totally fallen off a cliff. So,
and I think it's an interesting business lesson too. Like if you're, let's say you own a restaurant and you're like, well, we could actually like own the farm that makes this meat.
Sure.
And then we're, you know, vertically integrated, but like maybe your magic and what you're good at is running the restaurant, not the farm. So instead of trying to do step 1, 2, 3, just do step 3 very well and then do it again. Open another restaurant.
Dude, that is so, that speaks to my soul.
Yeah,
because a lot of what I thought of in the past when I was younger and doing some of this kind of stuff was like, how do we like keep taking more of the value chain, right?
Yeah.
But like, no, not always, right? Like what my initial thought when I had Common Commerce, which is when we bought the hearing aid company, which is the one we sold to OpenStore and Keith. First, we buy like 10 DTC brands that are all doing well. Then we crush OpEx by buying an agency. And then all the media buying is in-house. But it just became, it's not so simple because it can be done. But like we probably should just sort of focus on product really specifically, really yeah. well, right?
I haven't seen Motion Invest, but this site looks good.
Yeah, it's all blogs, it's all content sites. I want to see 6 to 12 months of nothing terrible happening to it.
Yeah, that is interesting too. The ones I've looked at on Flippa and whatever, they'll be like, yeah, it makes $10,000 a month, but then you like look back and it's like
it did make ten. Yeah. Motion Invest, there isn't much due diligence to do in the seller. Flippa, there will be because it's all marketplace to seller. Motion Invest is like they're listing it for them.
But so like, the Motion Invest is like a brokerage?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's closer to a brokerage in that regard.
They vet them a little bit.
Yeah,
or like
yeah.
That. And how do you verify those numbers are like accurate?
So those numbers, these are ones you get added in. I would be added in as a view-only access to their Mediavine account or their Amazon.
You would ask them.
Yeah, they'll do that for you.
Okay.
And then the thing that I use Ahrefs, SEMrush is the tool they pull from, but it'll show you the keywords that it's lost its rankings for in Google. And so it'll be like, for me, like if something has gone from doing phenomenally to horrifically, I don't want to deal with that, right? Like, and you can see where it's falling off. Is it trending downwards? Is it trending upwards? We want things that are stable or growing. And so like backlink analysis. So SiteBuddy, which is really interesting. So this one says here, there are 124 pages that have Amazon products being linked. They all have proper Amazon affiliate disclaimers in place. 260 links are being used. 19 links are missing an affiliate tag. So that means to me there's 19 different places on the website where the person is not getting paid that they could be getting paid. Right? Because the affiliate tag, like make sure they get the commission is gone. This is not so bad, but sometimes you'll read stark contrast, right? Like this is a small blog, but when you have like 100,000 page blogs that are getting 500,000 views that have like 4,000 products written about on them, like it's very common they'll have like 800 links that are broken, right? So can you get those fixed? And for us, the tool we use for that is called Lasso. I don't know if it's lasso.com. And so remember I said here, there's like 19 affiliate tags missing. Lasso would automatically go find them and replace them with your link for you.
Interesting.
Right? And okay. So that doesn't make a huge difference for a site that only makes from Amazon $100 a month. But if we're making $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month, and I thought that we could, that 20% of them are missing affiliate tags.
Yeah.
So if it's making $2,000 a month and 20% of the tags are missing, let's just assume the numbers stay the same. 20% of $2,000 is $400 more. $400 more for an hour of work becomes super compelling, especially when it sells for multiple of that $400. So since it sells for 30 to 40 times the monthly profit, if we add from an hour of work, if I add $400 a month in profit to it, I just added $12,000 in value to the business.
Yeah, it's interesting to start thinking in enterprise value numbers, not just like, oh, I made $400 a month. Yeah, but that actually...
So one reason I
never did that.
One reason I didn't lean into that too much with this, to be honest with you, is because... candidly, when I lean just, that's the easiest way to get people hyped on this.
Yeah.
The problem is I've realized that over a couple of years, I've ended up really attracting people that are desperate for money as opposed to people that like can really afford to buy an online business.
Yeah.
And like they still can make all the changes and make all that extra money. But immediately I get people like, oh, if I add $500 a month to the business, I can sell it $15,000 next month.
Yeah.
It's like, well, slow down. You know what I mean?
Not
like,
quite. You know? No, but people should think, because it's like when people buy stocks and check them every day, like imagine your stock that you hold 20x or 10x, like you'd be, that'd be amazing return. But you have stock in this business, it's just not Apple stock,
100%
soccer blog stock, but like you can 10x that and a lot easier than Apple stock would.
If we combine it with some of the magic of some seller financing or some debt, that's where it starts getting nutty, right?
Yeah.
Because even without doing a 10-to-1, right, let's say 50%, right, like if you put down $50,000 on something that's a $100,000 business, right? And that means it makes $3,000 a month of profit. Okay, well, first of all, your cash on cash return, you're making almost 100% of your money year one, which is just unlike any stock on the fucking planet. But let's say you could double the revenue of that. Now you've made, you know, you can double the profit of that business by just some changes that make it to, or 50% profit, add $1,500 a month to it. That's $50 a day. Totally possible numbers.
Yeah.
Right. Now all of a sudden your cash on cash return, ROI perspective, you made like 180%.
I had a couple other questions too, and we can do it next time you come back.